Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. I hope everything is going well with y'all. Things are going well with us. David Hempel is here, and today Jasmine and David and I went out to the Royal Gorge, which is lovely. Today's winter, so it was a little chilly, but it was still lovely, and we had a wonderful time. We went from there to a place called Tunnel Trail in near Canyon City. And then we came home and walked Jamie, so we had three walks today. And now it's getting dark outside. Because although we're past the solstice now, so I guess the days are actually starting to get a little longer. This is still the darkest time of the year. The days are shorter now than they are any other time of the year, right around the solstice. So I have a song I want to play. The song is about this time of year when it seems very dark. The name of the song is, let's see, Where is the Light? And it's by Peter Mayer. So he calls it a midwinter song.
December dark and cold.
Where is the light?
When old man you've been spending low.
Where is the light?
When the sun runs off a bit too soon.
Where is the light?
And there's nothing but a skinny moon.
Where is the light?
Can you tell me
where is the light? Where is the light? Where is the light?
Where's the light inside of me?
Each morning when I rise.
Where is the light?
And it's dark when my eggs are frying.
Where is the light?
And it's dark when off to work I go.
Where is the light?
And it's dark again when I get home.
Where is the light?
Can you tell me
where is the light? Where is the light? Where is the light? Oh, the light inside me.
Summer day, when the sun goes missing in the sky, it is rising in my eyes, chasing all that winter gloom away. I'm burning bright like kerosene.
Where is the light?
I'm drinking like a pleiadine.
Where is the light?
I'm dancing like a candle flame.
Where is the light?
Like a fruit flambé.
Where is the light?
Can you tell me
where is the light?
Can you tell me where is the light?
Can you tell me where is the light? Oh, the light's inside of me. Can you tell me where?
Fun song written exactly for this time of year, so I thought it would be fun to play it. Some of y'all probably know Peter Mayer, right? He sings another song that I think that we play often here called Holy Now. So this is just another one of his fun little songs, Where is the Light? So, as Lynn pointed out, we are here for the Seven Steps to Awakening, and I'll be sharing from my Seven Steps journal. Tonight we will be looking at quote 611. At least that's where we're going to start. I'm sure we'll get further than quote 611. I'm giving you a link right now for those of you who like to read along in the journal. And I'm just going to take a short little moment of silence before I begin, so please join me in that. Amen. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to be reading from The Seven Steps to Awakening. And I'm going to be reading a quote by Nisargadatta Maharaj. Last week, we spent a lot of time on 6:10. I think we spent the entire hour on 6:10. I doubt we'll be with 6:11 just as long. But it's just like 6:10 was a very short quote. 6:11 is a very short quote. So this is the Nisargadatta quote. I am not the mind, never was, nor shall be. Very simple. I am not the mind, never was, nor shall be. And yeah, that's really kind of interesting. Well, everything's interesting. But the word mind is kind of interesting, along with some other words, you know, like soul and consciousness and awareness. And what makes these words so interesting is that they actually have multiple definitions. And so whenever you hear the words, you can't ascribe a meaning to them and say, this meaning is concrete, and every time I hear this word, that's what it means. You can't do that because they have so many meanings. In fact, let me just pull up my dictionary.com here. I'm pulling up the word mind. And this dictionary has 7 definitions. I've seen more in other dictionaries. But in this one, the word mind means, first of all, the element, part, substance, or process that reasons, thinks, feels, wells, perceives, judges. And then the example is the processes of the human mind. But then the second definition is this. It's very different. The totality of conscious and unconscious mental processes and activities. And then the third one is the intellect or understanding as distinguished from the faculties of feeling and willing. Which remember, feel and will was in the first definition. Now the third definition says not including feeling and willing. Right, and it goes on from there. You know, we have other definitions as well. Like I said, I've seen other dictionaries that have even more definitions. But right here, just in these first three, we've seen 2 definitions that kind of contradict each other. And a third definition that included even more than either of those. It had this totality of consciousness going on. So, since there isn't really a concrete definition for the word mind, whenever we listen to a sentence that uses the word mind, we really have to listen to what they call the context of the sentence to see what is meant by mind. You know, for example, A Course in Miracles talks about the mind of God. And here, Nisargadatta is saying, I am not the mind, never was, nor shall be. And so we know that the word mind is having 2 different definitions. One, the mind of God is different than here, the mind that I never was nor shall be. So sometimes what's a little bit fun, at least for me, is to just sit and contemplate one word and ask, you know, what does this word mean here? What does this word mean now? And when I look at the word mind in this particular sentence, what I really see is all thoughts, and you could say emotions as well, all thoughts and emotions that follow the idea of I or me. That would be the mind in this particular sentence. So Nisargadatta says, I am not the mind, never was, nor shall be. And I don't think Nisargadatta is being arrogant in talking about himself. I think that this is a realization that we can all have, or a realization that we can all come to. And really, it's the same as saying, I am not that idea of me or any of the thoughts that follow. Thoughts that follow include, I am a body. Thoughts that follow include, I am in a world. You know, so I am not that idea of a me, of an I, or any of the thoughts that follow. That would be the mind. I'm not any of that. What I am is before all of that. So I'm going to go look at the journal and see what I wrote when I contemplated 6/11 a couple of years ago. This was on October 5th, 2012. I wrote, the mind would like to convince us that being without it is an impossible task. Each time it is let go, it seems to float back into awareness as if it is what we are and it knows where our attention should be. But the mind is wrong. It is not what we are. We have never been the mind. We have been distracted by it, but nothing more. It is time to lose interest in the mind. And so if we realize that the context of this particular sentence is that the mind is really the idea of a me, of a personal self, a separate me, a distinct individual me, and all of the ideas that follow that, right? If we realize that when we read this, then we can look at that very first sentence, at least some of us can, maybe not all of us yet. We can look at that very first sentence in the journal that says, the mind would like to convince us that being without it is an impossible task. And we may see immediately that that is not true, that not that the sentence isn't true, but what the mind is trying to convince us of is not true. I do not have to have an idea of me and that whole package of thoughts that follows. It's not necessary. I've heard teachers teach before that the ego is necessary in the world, and I think that in that particular sentence, unless they really see things completely differently than I do, which is a possibility, but I think in that particular sentence, they're looking at the word ego differently, just like sometimes the word mind is used differently. And the teachings of Inner Ramana, it also refers to the mind, and it's referring to the mind a little differently in some cases. Sometimes it refers to the mind in the same way it's used here, that thought of I and everything that follows. But it has another definition of mind. In fact, in the very, very first message of the teachings of Inner Ramana, it talks about mind as simply a filter that allows us the perception of a world, that allows us the experience of a world. And it says you could not have a perception of a world if it wasn't for the mind. So in that case, in order to have an experience of a world, in order to know, you know, I'm drinking a cup of tea is, a cup of tea right now, in order to know what this cup of tea is, I need a mind. But what's interesting is I don't need that idea of a me and all of those thoughts that follow. I need the ability to perceive, but I don't need the idea of a me. And the reason I know this is because I had a very brief experience once. It didn't last long. It was maybe 20 minutes. But I had an experience once where the idea of a me and all of those thoughts that follow, it disappeared for me once. It wasn't there for, like I said, very brief. I said 20 minutes. It might even have been 45 minutes. I don't remember exactly, but it was a brief period of time. And during that time, I mean, I don't know how much. I'm going to say 95% of thought did not exist. Because, you know, 95% of thought, maybe, is thought that comes from that idea of me and what follows. But at the same time, there were still thoughts. There were thoughts that I called thoughts that moved me, and thoughts of understanding regarding what I was looking at, and, you know, in that particular moment. Even a little bit of commentary, for example, one of the things I was asked to do during that period of time, this is what the thoughts were telling me to do. Thoughts came in, like I said, they were thoughts that moved me, thoughts that told me what to do. I don't know how to explain that. So there were thoughts that moved me. Like if a thought said, I'm hungry now, that's a thought that moves you, right? Oh, I have to go to the bathroom now, that's a thought that moves you. So I thoughts came in that moved me. And one of the thoughts that came in that moved me told me to go to the computer and look up Regina Dawn Akers. And I, at that time, had no idea of what a Regina Dawn Akers was. None. I mean, I wasn't even thinking about, like, what is a Regina Dawn Akers? There weren't those kinds of thoughts. I just went over, I looked up Regina Dawn Akers, and I read about her. And all of this happened without me thinking. But at the end of reading about her, there was this little thought where I giggled because I could remember, I could barely remember, but I could remember that I used to think I was her. And I thought that was the funniest thing in the world that I ever could have thought that I was her, because it was so obvious to me that she was this idea only, this little bitty, finite idea. There were no more thoughts about it. There were no more big thoughts like, oh, and I'm the grand universe or nothing. Just this little fleeting, huh, that's funny that I could have ever thought I was her. And then it stopped. You know, there was no more thinking again. But I knew what a computer was. I knew how to go over and search Yahoo for Regina Dawn Akers and pull up her biography and read it. So it's kind of like there was mind and there was not mind. Right? Because there was no thought of me, no stories going on, no memories of, you know, here's who I was yesterday, and no thoughts of here's who I'm going to be tomorrow, none of that stuff. And there was also nothing missing. I mean, the thought that something's missing, even that's a thought. So there was no thought that anything could have been missing. I'm looking at somebody's name in the room, nothing missing. Yeah, there is nothing missing. If I had been asked to, you know, in this brief period of time to balance a checkbook, I still would have been able to do that. If I had been asked to drive a car, I still would have been able to do that. I would have known to stop at a stop sign, go on a green light. If I had been asked to go to the grocery store and buy groceries, I would have been able to do that. I would have been able to pay money. You know, when they said it's $131.17, I would have known what that was. Like in that way, the mind was there. But there was no thought about a me and none of the thoughts that followed. Those aren't necessary. They aren't needed. I'm going to call it chatter. That's chatter. And it's not even needed for survivability or experience within a world. So Nisargadatta, of course, using language, which is a function of mind, right? Language is learned, right? It's a function of mind. Nisargadatta, using language, says, I am not the mind, never was, nor shall be. And so it's very clear that that what's being talked about here is that idea of a me and all of the thoughts that follow that. And the journal says, the mind would like to convince us that being without it is an impossible task. Each time it, the idea of a me, is let go, it seems to float back into awareness, as if it is what we are, and it knows where our attention should be. So maybe during a meditation, maybe during awareness, watching awareness or something like that, like this idea of me is let go and there's this just this being with awareness. But then my 30 minutes is up or whatever and it's time to do something else. And when I get up and I go to do that something else, the story of me returns. And it's again believed. The mind would like to convince us that being without it is an impossible task. Each time it is let go, it seems to float back into awareness as if it is what we are and it knows where our attention should be. But the mind is wrong. It is not what we are. We have never been the mind. We have been distracted by it, but nothing more. It is time to lose interest in the mind. And this doesn't mean lose interest in doing math, if you have to do math to balance a checkbook. This doesn't even mean lose interest in studying. You know, like if you have a job and you have to learn how to use a new computer system and you're being given a manual and told to study it. You know, it doesn't mean lose interest in studying. It means lose interest in the idea of a me and all that follows that idea. Lose interest in the idea of a me and everything, all of those stories, all of those thoughts, all of those beliefs that follow that. I'm going to scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and go to 612. And I'm going to read 612 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is again Nisargadatta Maharaj. When you know that you are neither body nor mind, you will not be swayed by them. When you know that you are neither body nor mind, you will not be swayed by them. The sense that I get when I read that, I'm reminded of in the Bible when Jesus talked about the house built upon shifting sands and the house built upon a foundation of rock. I'm kind of reminded of that as I read this, because what this says to me is that as long as I believe I am a body or a mind, meaning, of course, the idea of I and everything that follows it, as long as I believe that, I am not going to be consistent. There's going to be an inconsistency in me in some way. You know, like maybe, depending on who I am, maybe I'm pretty much at peace until my financial security becomes threatened, and then all the worries come in, all the fears come in. Or maybe, depending on who I am, maybe I'm basically happy until I find out that people are talking about me behind my back, and you know, that then gets me all bothered and worried and concerned about how I present myself. I won't be consistent. Somewhere, something is going to cause me to leave my consistency. As long as I believe that I am a body or a mind. That's the house on shifting sands. And of course, the house on the foundation of rock is knowing who I am, which is before mind and obviously before body. When you realize who you are before mind, it's also before body. It's before manifestation. Before and beyond. Transcendent of manifestation. When I know myself as that, and I'm not talking intellectually, because I know we all probably know that intellectually. I'm talking in a solid way. I remember Muji once said, he said something, he was talking to somebody about this, and he was saying something about the knowledge of who you are, you know, when it really happens for you, when that shift really occurs that is called awakening. It's just this very natural knowledge. You don't have to think about it at all. You just know. And he likened it to, right now, you know your name. You know, for example, if your name is Lynn, I say, Lynn, you know, you turn your head. You don't have to stop and think, is she talking to me? Lynn, you turn around. Or David, you turn around, you know. And you don't have to think about it. It's just something you know. You know your name. He said it's like that. It's that solid. You know who you are. So when we know who we are as solidly as we know our name now, it's never forgotten. We never have to think about it. We never get confused on it, right? It's just solid. Then that's having the house on the foundation of rock. But until it's that solid, to be honest, we are all still the house built on the shifting sands. And even if we're at peace most of the time, happy most of the time, centered most of the time, something can still come along to throw us off kilter, off center. But when you know that you are neither body nor mind, you will not be swayed by them. So let's look at the journal, 612. The beliefs, I am a person and I am specific, must be looked at directly with light, inner wisdom. These beliefs, unwatched, let in a myriad of thoughts that hide the self. Once these beliefs are dissolved through consistent watching with clarity, with light, related thoughts lose their attraction value, and an entire bundle of thinking disappears from the mind. That's interesting, because when I was telling you all about the experience I had, whether it was 20 minutes or 45 minutes, whatever it was, that experience where the idea of a me just, it wasn't there. and all of the thoughts that followed it weren't there. Although I didn't use the words that a bundle of thinking was not there, I kind of did, because I told you that something like 98% of the thinking wasn't there. I said there were still thoughts. There were thoughts that moved me. There was even a little bit of commentary, because that idea that I could ever have thought that I was Regina was there. You know, that's a thought. That's a commentary thought. And I thought it was funny. But yet, at the same time, even though there was still some thought and even some commentary, there was a whole bundle of thinking, a whole thought system. Everything about me, about who I was, it just was not there. It was not there. And so this is saying that if we look carefully with the light at the ideas, I am a person and I am specific. I am specific would be the same as I am a body. If we look carefully at those ideas with the light, that what happens is thoughts that are related to them, which would be thoughts from that thought system, they begin to lose their attraction value. And an entire bundle of thinking disappears from the mind. So what this might look like then, if I've been looking at the ideas that I'm a person and that I'm specific with the light, you know, one day I might turn on the TV And the TV might tell me that the stock market has just crashed. You know, and if I have some money in there, you know, I may look and I may see that my money is now worth 30% of what it was. If I've been looking at the idea I'm a person with clarity, and I've been looking at the idea I'm specific with clarity, and I've been practicing this for a time, there may be a quick thought that appears, something about, you know, disaster, something that is trying to say this is not good, that the stock market crashed. But that thought actually won't even be followed. It won't develop into a big story. It won't develop into a big reaction. It won't develop into anything. Because there's not an interest in that thought system. There's not an interest in that way of thinking. You see, that idea that something's wrong, that I only have 30% of the money that I had yesterday, that's one of the thoughts that follows the idea of a me. You know, that's a me and a my money and a my future, right? It's in that thought system. So if I've been looking carefully at the idea of me with clarity, really looking at it for some time, and looking at it to me, you know, lots of people I think don't really quite know what looking at it means. Looking at it for me kind of has two parts to it. One is inquiring into, practicing inquiry with it. And the other part is watching it in a very detached way. Watching it just, to me, it's an inner standing back from and not interfering with. So if for the last year, the last couple of years, you know, when stories about me began to arise, if I either practiced inquiry or I just somehow within stepped way back and kind of let the story go, but I didn't touch it, didn't engage with it, didn't get involved with it, then what happens as a result of these two practices, what happens is I naturally begin to lose interest in stories of me. They don't have the same interest they used to. So when that stock market crashes and my money is now 30% of what it was and my mind starts trying to say something about disaster, I don't get involved with it. I'm not attracted to it. That's the best way to put it. I'm not attracted. It's not like I have to fight it. I'm not attracted to it. And because I'm not attracted to it, it does not develop. So again, the journal says, the beliefs I am a person and I am specific must be looked at directly with light. And it defines light as inner wisdom. These beliefs, unwatched, let in a myriad of thoughts that hide the self. Once these beliefs are dissolved through consistent watching with clarity, with light, related thoughts lose their attraction value, and an entire bundle of thinking disappears from the mind. And again, as we've seen, that's okay. You know, the mind may try and tell me I need that bundle of thinking, but I don't. I can still do math. I can still drive a car. I can still cook food. I can still dress myself. You know, I could still do all of that. But the drama is gone. Yes, Barb. In fact, Muji said once, he says, you know, I still recognize my children. Because somebody was worried that, you know, when you let go of the mind, you become, for lack of better words, a bumbling idiot. And he said to the person, I still recognize my children. I think I heard Byron Katie say something similar once too, but I'm not as sure. But I do remember Muji saying that. So we can still function. We still have what we need. We have that type of mind to function. But yeah, the idea of who I am and all of the thinking that follows that is gone. I'm going to scroll down and click on 613 underneath the comment and reply area. From Nisargadatta Maharaj says, "The dissolution of personality is followed always by a sense of great relief, as if a heavy burden has fallen off." So that's very much what Barb has written into the room as I was talking just now. She wrote, "The drama is gone." It seems like, you know, that's the same thing that Nisargadatta is saying. Once this idea that I am a person and that I am a body falls away, when I allow this to happen, he says, it is always with a great sense of relief, as if a heavy burden has fallen off. All the drama is gone, is the way Barb worded it. So again, this idea that we saw earlier, like up in 611, the idea that the mind is telling us, but you need that. You know, you can't function if you don't have this idea of a me and a history and a story and all of that. You can't function. As we've seen, that not only is that not true, but not only that, there's just this sense of freedom. This heavy burden is gone. All of the drama is gone. All of the problems are gone. It doesn't mean that there aren't still things that have to be dealt with. You know, so my car could break and I have to call someone to tow me to a garage and I have to find someone to repair the car, but it's not a problem. It's just what's happening. Right? There's no problem because the idea of me is gone. There are no more problems. I'm reminded now of not just NTI, actually the Bible, both NTI Revelation and the Bible. You know, Revelation has a reputation, of course, of being this awful book in the Bible. And, you know, certainly the way it's written is not a very pretty book. But it ends on a beautiful note. If you haven't read Revelation, if you read the last couple of chapters of Revelation, you'll see it really talks about how there are no more tears. You know, all the tears have been wiped away. It's almost as if the world has been returned to the paradise earth that it was originally meant to be. It's kind of the story it seems to tell, although Christians don't always interpret it that way. In fact, very few do. But it seems to be the story that it tells. You know, everything has been returned to this wonderful, happy earth, which just everything is wonderful now. And Isaiah points to that as well. Well, that can be our earth now if we let go of the idea of me. No more problems. Still doing things. Still doing happens. But no more problems. All the tears are wiped away. The dissolution of personality is followed always by a sense of great relief, as if a heavy burden has fallen off. The dissolution of personality is followed always by a sense of great relief, as if a heavy burden has fallen off. Okay, so now I'm going to go to the journal for number 613. And the journal says, the bundle, and remember 612 talked about that thinking bundle. We would call that a thought system if we're using the language of A Course in Miracles. The bundle that is carried based on the beliefs, I am a person and I am specific, is not a light bundle, although it appears to be carried unnoticed. One does not see how bent over one has become by the burden of these thoughts. It may seem to take great effort to stand up straight under the weight of this burden so the bundle can finally be put down. However, the effort of straightening is worth it, and freedom is realized when the bundle has been let go. This is one of those times when, as I was contemplating, not only were the words coming, but there was like a picture, an image in the mind as well. And of course, you could probably tell from the words that in the image, you know, I was walking all bent over with this big sack, heavy sack, you know, full of something. Who knows what it was? I guess it was full of a thought system, but this heavy, heavy sack on my back. And in order to put the sack down, I had to stand up straight. And then I could release it and it would fall from my back. And the standing up straight seemed like a struggle. Like I had become so accustomed to being bent over with this bundle on my back that it felt easier to remain bent over with the bundle on my back. And you might be able to see that. You might be able to see, because at least when you're bent over with that bundle on your back, you know, the bundle is against your back in a way where it's being somewhat supported. And you're not having to struggle too much against it. It's, you know, there's suffering happening there, but somehow, you know, you can talk yourself into thinking it's comfortable. It's better this way. But then if you try to stand up, oh, first of all, you're stiff because you've been bent over so long, and now you're going fighting against gravity for a time, right? You're fighting against gravity and you're trying to stand up, and that seems so hard that it seems easier just to bend over again and stay there. But if you want to be free of the bundle enough, you might go through the effort of fighting against the gravity and the stiffness in order to stand up. And when you stand up completely, you stand up straight, the bundle just slips right off. And then there's this great relief, right? So what this tells me is that one reason that we hold on to the thought of a me and the thought that I'm a body and all of the stories, all of the drama, as Barb said, even if we're suffering, you know, even if we're conscious that we're suffering with it, is because at the same time, somehow it feels easier. We're accustomed to it. And the practices that people, the teachers give us to help us release this bundle, they seem like more of a burden than the bundle itself. It's easier to live with stories in my mind all day than it is to get up an hour earlier in the day and contemplate or meditate. It's easier to live with whatever I experience, whether it be worry, anxiety, depression, whatever it is, it seems easier to live with that than it does to maybe stop socializing in a gossipy way, you know, or whatever my habits are. Stop drinking too much, or stop, you know, whatever my habits are that are keeping me stuck in the person. We all have different habits that keep us stuck in the person. Eating too much. Different habits, and these habits in themselves are well, they're in a way they're nothing, except that they keep us believing I am this person. And so rather than go through the work, the effort of change, which is like standing up. You know, if I'm used to getting high every night, it can be difficult not to do that anymore. If I'm used to getting angry and annoyed and shouting at people, it can be difficult not to do that anymore. If I'm used to controlling everything in my life, it can be difficult not to do that anymore. See, that's the straightening up. Right? It's easier to hold on to all of that and to stay bent over with this thought system bundle that really is suffering. It seems easier to stay there than to do whatever it is that I have to do in my particular situation to let it go. So again, the journal says, the bundle that is carried based on the beliefs, I am a person and I am specific, is not a light bundle, although it appears to be carried unnoticed. One does not see how bent over one has become by the burden of these thoughts. It may seem to take great effort to stand up straight under the weight of this burden, so the bundle can finally be put down. However, the effort of straightening is worth it. And freedom is realized when the bundle has been let go. The effort of straightening is worth it. And the freedom is realized when the bundle has been let go. So it might be interesting to ask, what are my habits? What habits do I have that support the idea that I am this person? What habits are really a part of the story of this mind? They're a part of the I and everything that follows the I. Rather than being the real self, which is prior to mind. And am I willing to change habits? And the word of the Buddhists, change unwholesome habits for wholesome habits. In order to straighten, and again, a wholesome habit might be, you know, depending on who you are and what your guidance is, it might be daily meditation, it might be daily contemplation, it might be daily inquiry, you know, it might be really practicing forgiveness instead of just talking about it. You know, there are a ton of different practices that are used that are new habits that are helpful to awakening, right? Instead of the habits that keep us believing that we're the personality. Am I willing to straighten by letting go of old habits, which take some effort, and taking on new habits, which also take some effort, just like standing up under that bundle takes effort, so that that bundle can slide off and I can be free? Am I willing, or do I think it's easier to stay right here, exactly as I am, with no change, remaining bent over with the bundles on my back? I'm going to scroll down and click on 614A. Oh, wait, 614A? Well, what the heck, I'll click on it. Sometimes when they say A, it ends up taking me a whole hour to talk about them. But we'll go with it anyway. We'll see what happens. So 614 by Nisargadatta says, it is not you who desires, fears, and suffers. It is the person built on the foundation of your body by circumstances and influences. You are not that person. Now, this is a really interesting quote, because especially when we start talking about letting go of some of these old habits which keep me in the idea that I'm the person, you know, and taking on these new habits which also take effort, because the resistance is there telling me I don't want to do that with my time, right? What this is telling me is, as I'm sitting here thinking, I really want to continue to relax by watching TV every night. I'd rather You know, I work all day. It's a hard life. I just, when I come home, I just want to sit and I want to watch TV and I want to relax. And I don't want to, you know, contemplate, meditate, you know, pick up a spiritual book. And, I'm telling myself this story, right? I just don't want to. I deserve to relax. There's nothing wrong with relaxing, which is true. But, you know, this is the logic that's trying to keep me stuck here. There's nothing wrong with relaxing. You know, I want to do this. What this is telling me, this particular quote, is all of that chatter that's going on in my mind that's keeping me in the same position without changing. I'm saying, I want this. I don't want that. Nisargadatta is saying, that's not even you. That's not even you. That's just the thought system running. You are not the one who wants to, whether it's, you know, watch meaningless TV every night or whatever the habit is, or control everything around you to make things work out your way, or, you know, whatever it is. You are not the one who wants to do that. That's the thought system. You're believing that you are the mind. You're believing that you are the thoughts. Your resistance to these wholesome practices isn't even your resistance. It's thoughts. You know, if you ever watch Muji is wonderful at this. And I actually haven't seen Muji in about 3 years or so, so I'm really going by memory. But, you know, I've watched people sit there and they'll say things to Muji like, you know, but it's just so much effort. And Muji will say, that's a thought. Well, I don't really even know how to meditate. That's a thought. You know why? You know, just they'll throw out excuse after excuse after excuse. And Muji says, that's a thought. That's a thought. That's a thought. That's what Nisargadatta is saying here. That is not you. Those are thoughts. And what you're doing right now is believing the entire thought system. You're believing the I at the beginning, at the foundation of the thought system, and you're believing the entire thought system after it. You're carrying the bundle. You're bent over right now. But it's not even you. Not even you. You know, I love Michael Langford calls it the imposter self. That's a wonderful term. The imposter. Not even you. You're not the one who doesn't want to quit drinking. You're not the one who doesn't want to quit overeating. You're not the one who doesn't want to, you know, quit controlling. You're not the one who doesn't want to whatever, 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 which is really causing additional suffering for you and sometimes those around you. You're not the one who doesn't want to change. That's the thought system. That's the bundle on the back talking. The imposter self, not the real self. You're believing lies and thinking they're your truth. It is not you who desires, fears, and suffers. It is the person built on the foundation of your body by circumstances and influences. You are not that person. And here the word person is synonymous with mind in the way that we defined mind earlier in the hour. It's the thought system. The idea. Remember I told you when I didn't have that idea, the thought that I could have ever thought I was Regina was funny. I mean, how could I, knowing who I was in that period of time, how could I ever have thought I was an idea? And Regina was an idea. An idea is a part of a thought system. How could I have ever thought I was an idea? But that's what we do. That's what not being awake is. We think we are an idea and we believe it and we have resistances based on it and we get angry at people based on it and we defriend people, you know, in real life, not just on Facebook because of it. And it's not even you. So let's look at the journal. 614A says, first, the mind, then the body, then the person was made and believed in. That means this person who you think you are is three times removed from reality. And so what this really means is, first there's the sense of an I, and then a physical manifestation, the body. But if you pay attention to children as they grow up, the idea of who I am as a person is developed over time. And in fact, it continues to shift and change. You know, like the person that I am today is different than the person that I was 20 years ago, which shows they're just ideas, right? The ideas have shifted and changed. So first there's this idea of an I, and then there's this physical manifestation of the body, and then the person, which actually shifts and changes. So the thought that I am this person is three times removed from reality. The I is one time removed from reality. The body is two times. The person that I think I am, whether I'm a Republican, a Democrat, a spiritual person, you know, a person who's sick and tired of listening to Regina talk, whoever I am, that's three times removed away from who I am. That's not who I am. Right? That's the imposter. It's very, very far from who I am. So first the mind, then the body, then the person was made and believed in. That means this person who you think you are is three times removed from reality. And I'm going to scroll down and click on 614B. Again, the quote we're looking at is, "It is not you who desires, fears, and suffers. It is the person built on the foundation of your body by circumstances and influence." Again, the ideas of who we are, right? They come about as we grow up in this world and as we move about in this world. You are not that person. It is not you who desires, fears, and suffers. It is the person built on the foundation of your body by circumstances and influences. You are not that person. So 614B says, this is true, although most people never think about this. If I was raised in a different time, place, or culture, would I be the same bundle of thoughts and beliefs that make up this specific personality? If the bundle of thoughts and beliefs that makes up this personality is based on time, place, and experiential influences, can it be who I am? Or must it be merely a derivative of experience? If the personality is a derivative of experience, is there any reasonable justification for clinging to it as me? Or is it wiser to seek for that which is present before experience? And of course, most of you probably know I have an adopted daughter from China. I brought her to this country when she was one, and I raised her in my culture, my family culture, in this American culture. Do you really think that if Jasmine had been raised by her Chinese parents, she would be the same person that she is today? Maybe the same face on a body, right? And there would be a person, she would think she was a person, there'd be a person there because the I is there, right? And everything would have happened in a life to create a person, but she would not be the same person had she been raised by her Chinese parents as if she was raised by me. That shows you that the person is not true. The person is not false. The person is just accumulated ideas. It is not who I am. So whoever I think I am, whatever I think my resistances are, whoever I think I have grievances against, or whatever I think I have grievances against, whatever I think is right about this world, whatever I think is wrong about this world, even what I think God is derivative. And not true. And with that, I'm out of time. So I'll pass the mic on, and I'll be back in 2 hours for today's daily contemplation. Bye.